I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
On the morning of October 2, 2018, Cheryl Coker, a devoted mother of two from Riverside, Ohio, dropped off her daughter at school. Later that day, her car was left at a Kroger parking lot, and surveillance footage captured a mysterious figure dressed in all black, exiting the vehicle and walking away. Despite an exhaustive investigation and numerous leads, it took over a year and a half before Cheryl's skeletal remains were discovered in a wooded area just 15 minutes from her home. Although a cause and manner of death could not be determined, authorities believe that she had been murdered. It's been almost 6 years since Cheryl was killed, and investigators believe they not only know what happened to her, but who's responsible. And yet, as we sit here today, no one has been charged. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve one of these cases. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. This is going to be an interesting case tonight because sometimes I come on here and I'm trying to get exposure for the victims and their families because the case we're discussing is a complete mystery. Then there are other cases that I come across, and yet although they're unsolved, it's pretty evident what happened. And yet, no justice, no answers, no opportunity for the families of the victims to confront the person responsible. And in some cases, it's actually a family member that's responsible, which makes the investigation that much more complex. But these cases frustrate me because they have a common theme. You have a person of interest, maybe even a suspect. You have circumstantial evidence, no smoking gun, but you also have a situation where the exculpatory evidence rules out 99.9% of the population, and yet once it gets to the people responsible for deciding whether or not to press charges, the case hits a standstill. And years go by, and the person who everyone believes was involved is walking around free to do whatever they want. So this case and many others like this pose a very important question. At what point do you sit back, look at what you have, and say, okay, this is all we're ever going to have. It's time to take a shot, do what we can, and let the chips fall where they may. And I do believe that this is one of those cases, but I want to lay out all the facts of the investigation, and I want you guys to come to your own conclusion. At the end, when I give my perspective, I'll offer some alternate theories, but I warn you, I have a counter to those theories already that basically rules them out, but I try to stay objective, I try to stay impartial, and we're going to do it here tonight. But I want to hear your opinions on this case as well, so let's not waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. Cheryl Lynn Coker was born on April 24, 1972, to parents Edward and Mary. She grew up in Ohio and was known for being an outgoing and happy person who enjoyed spending time with her friends and family. As an adult, Cheryl got married and had a daughter named Marissa. That marriage eventually ended in divorce, leaving Cheryl a single mother. She later met William Coker, also known as Bill, and the two married shortly thereafter. Bill adopted Marissa, and he and Cheryl went on to have another daughter together named Michaela. The family settled into a home on Christie Avenue in Riverside, Ohio, and things went well for a while. But then, in the mid-2000s, Cheryl and Bill started having issues in their marriage after Cheryl found a secret phone in Bill's car. According to People Magazine Investigates, Cheryl asked Bill about the phone, and he admitted to having an affair. Cheryl told him that she would divorce him if he didn't stop, and Bill promised to end things. After the discovery of the affair, Cheryl and Bill agreed to have an open marriage, but with strict rules. They couldn't develop feelings for the other person, and they had to be honest with each other about what was happening. The couple seemed to manage their open marriage for many years, but in April of 2018, Cheryl discovered that Bill was in a romantic relationship with a coworker named Aaron. Cheryl confronted Bill and told him she would file for divorce if he didn't end the relationship with Aaron. Bill claimed he didn't want a divorce, but he also didn't end the relationship with Aaron. So Cheryl filed for divorce and for custody of Michaela. Her other daughter, Marissa, was already an adult, so Cheryl didn't need to worry about custody with her. WHIO-TV reported that on September 24th, Cheryl texted her coworker about how the divorce was going. She said, quote, "I think he got served today because I just got this text from him." And then there was a screenshot of the actual text between Bill to Cheryl, and it read, quote, "Thanks for putting the nail in my coffin. I'm going to be making $17.50 if they put me in a clerk position, $16.50 if there's nothing available. Thanks." One of Cheryl's coworkers replied, quote, "Wish I made $17.50, LOL." And Cheryl responded, quote, "LMAO exclamation point, so I will be in tomorrow if I'm not dead, bah ha ha ha." And for those of you who don't know, and I think 99% of you do, you're probably rolling your eyes right now, LMAO, it means laugh my ass off, for the old people out there like me who wouldn't know what that meant a year ago. And she's joking about it, but you have to think, was there some part of her that was actually being serious? And as we continue to go over the specifics of this case and get more into Bill's history and some of his behavior in the past, I think it'll become apparent that she wasn't completely joking here. Now that evening, Cheryl and Bill argued about the divorce, and according to Cheryl's daughters, she became scared of Bill and decided to stay at a hotel for the night. Eventually, she did return to the house but began sleeping in a different area away from Bill. On September 29th and 30th, Bill and Michaela were on vacation in Florida while Cheryl stayed in Ohio to attend a wedding. Now, what's interesting about this situation is that Cheryl wasn't aware of it, but Bill's girlfriend Erin actually went on the trip to Florida as well. So they were down there for a couple days, and then Bill and Michaela returned home late on Monday, October 1st. On the morning of October 2nd, Cheryl dropped Michaela off at school, but after that, Michaela never heard from her mother again. She tried calling her and texting her all day, but she didn't get an answer. By around 8 p.m. that evening, Michaela was worried enough to ask Bill if he knew where Cheryl was, but he said he didn't know. Michaela then called Cheryl's family to see if they had spoken to her, but no one had heard from Cheryl since that morning, which was completely out of character. Cheryl's sister Margie went out looking for Cheryl, but she didn't find her. She then called the police and reported Cheryl missing, and according to WHIO-TV, an officer went to Margie's house, and she explained that she talked to her sister every single day after work. However, that didn't happen on that day. Because of this, Margie knew something was wrong. The officer then went to Cheryl's house and spoke to Bill. He explained that he and Michaela had just returned from a trip to Florida late the night before. When asked if they were the only ones who went, he lied and said yes. The officer then asked if Bill knew where Cheryl was, and he replied, quote,
We're getting a divorce. I mean, she has a boyfriend.
So you can see from that body cam footage, he's kind of matter of fact, doesn't really have much of a care as to where Cheryl is, doesn't seem too concerned about her whereabouts. And one could argue it's because of their situation. You know, they're going through a divorce, they're seeing other people. If you're to believe him at first, you're thinking, all right, you know, he's thinking that she's out with another man. Therefore, he doesn't really care. But the reality of the situation is, regardless of what you may think, she could have been out with someone who had malicious intentions and she may be in need of assistance. So regardless of whether you think she's out with someone else or not, you would think after being together all these years, having a kid together, there would be much more concern in his voice and his mannerisms, and yet that's not the case. Now, following this initial interview with Bill, the police issued a bolo for Cheryl's 2016 Toyota Highlander. The Dayton Daily News reported that the next day, Michaela used the Find My iPhone app to track Cheryl's phone, which was pinging at the Kroger located at the intersection of Spinning Road and Burkhart Road, less than a mile from their home. Now, I'm not here to second guess anyone, but I have to address it because I'm sure some of you are thinking it. If this order of events is accurate, and let's be honest, it not always is, if they didn't use this app until the next day, you have to wonder why. I don't think it's anything nefarious. It could have just been a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, a lot of worry going on, and it slips their mind that they have this app available to track Cheryl's phone. I've done it before. I haven't done it recently, but there have been times when I'm looking around my house for my AirPods or my phone, and then I realize, oh, I can just use my watch to ping my phone. You would think that this would have came to fruition sooner by one of the family members, but here we are. It didn't happen. And as we get into more specifics about the case, I don't think it would have mattered if it was done sooner. But either way, I know some of you are questioning it. I was as well. And yeah, it could be just as simple as we didn't think about it. And I would believe that, especially considering what we have here. I don't think Michaela has anything to hide. And so more than likely, that's probably what happened. Now, after finally using the app and finding Cheryl's phone, Michaela and some of Cheryl's family went to the Kroger, and in the parking lot, they found Cheryl's Highlander. The car was locked with her purse, driver's license, credit cards, and cell phone all still inside. Cheryl's family called the police and an officer came to the scene. The officer then called Bill and asked him to come as well. Bill arrived shortly after, and when he did, one of the officers noticed that he had some scabs on his elbows. At this point, with everything they had, the police began to think that something suspicious was going on with Cheryl's disappearance, so they opened a full investigation. They immediately spoke to neighbors and also checked Cheryl's phone records, and upon checking those records, they learned that on October 2nd at 7:35 a.m., she returned home after dropping Michaela off at school. She spent the next few minutes on Facebook, but at around 7:45 a.m., she stopped using her phone and no one heard from her again. A neighbor reported seeing Cheryl's car in the driveway at 10:45 a.m., which matched phone records showing her phone ping near the house until 10:51 a.m. Then just 1 minute later, it pinged near Kroger. According to the Dayton Daily News, detectives requested surveillance footage from the businesses near Kroger and discovered that one camera captured Cheryl's car turning into the Kroger parking lot at 10:52 a.m. Now, I want to talk about this timeline because I think it's extremely important to my overall perspective of this case. But before we do, let's take our one and only break and we'll be right back.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
Okay, we're back, and I just want to reiterate what I just said because I do not want to skate over it. We know that Cheryl goes and drops off Michaela. That's confirmed by Michaela. And then, as I mentioned, she returns home after dropping Michaela off at approximately 7:35 a.m. She uses her phone for Facebook for a few minutes around 7:45, and then all phone activity stops altogether after that. But we have to remember, as the phone is being pinged at the house, her car is also in the driveway the entire time. And that car is there until approximately 10:45 a.m. with the phone as well. So we have to believe that whatever happened to Cheryl was happening inside that house. And why do we know that? Well, we know that whoever the offender is, they had keys to her car if it's not Cheryl who took the car. And so we have a situation here where at 10:51 a.m., the car is still near the house with her phone. And then 1 minute later, the phone is now at the Kroger parking lot with her vehicle. So unless we find out that it's Cheryl who took her phone and drove her car over to the Kroger, we have a major issue here, because that believes whatever happened to Cheryl, whoever's responsible for it, was inside her house. And you may be saying to yourself right now, well, Derek, how do we know that Cheryl didn't take her phone and then drive herself over to the Kroger parking lot, then meet up with someone, and whatever happened, happened from that point on? You know, that's definitely a scenario that I would consider until we talk about what happened next. So the detectives are looking at this footage. They see Cheryl's car pull into the Kroger parking lot. And after the car parked in the lot, someone wearing a black sweatshirt with a hood, black pants, and white gloves stepped out of the vehicle and walked off frame. Now, unfortunately, the video quality was too low to identify the driver. However, detectives could tell it wasn't Cheryl. It appeared to actually be a man. Now, as I'm talking right now, I have the surveillance footage from the parking lot showing, so you can see it yourself. As you can see, yes, you can see someone get out of the vehicle, but unless you have some superhuman hero ability that I'm unaware of, there's no way you're going to be able to identify that person from this footage. Now, after seeing that footage, you may be saying to yourself, well, Derek, how from that footage were they able to determine that it wasn't Cheryl and that it was a man? That seems pretty far-fetched. Yes, it could, until we find out what happens after that. While conducting their investigation, detectives learned that shortly after the man walked out of frame, two people called 911 to report seeing a suspicious man dressed in all black walking around a residential area near the Kroger, using his hands to conceal his face. So there you go, that's how they learned that this was in fact a man and not Cheryl, and obviously his behavior does not align with something an innocent person would do. According to People Magazine Investigates, at approximately 11:13 a.m., the first 911 caller reported seeing the suspicious white male near Utopia Place at Mundy Court. The caller was concerned that the man might be up to something, so they circled the block and saw the man again, this time walking up Spring Garden Place at Christie Avenue, heading toward the back of Spinning Hills Middle School, which just so happens to border the Coker's backyard. The caller then lost track of the man, but fortunately, a second witness also reported seeing the exact same man walking toward the back of Spinning Hills Middle School. Why is this so important? It's basically just corroborating the first witness, which gives more validity and credibility to the caller's story. This ensures that what they reported seeing is actually true. I talk to you guys all the time about witness testimony and how when you only have one person who reports something, you have to approach it with a level of skepticism, because the last thing you want to do is put your entire case on this one breadcrumb, which is actually going down the wrong path. However, when you have two people who are not connected to each other, who reported at different times from different locations, and yet report the exact same information, that makes it much more credible and allows you to follow that lead with a higher level of certainty. And listen, this witness testimony is great, but you know what's even better? Surveillance footage from the school. And that's exactly what detectives went after next. So investigators went to the school and obtained the surveillance footage, which showed that at approximately 11:09 a.m. to 11:10 a.m., the person in black was walking by the school, heading directly to the Coker home, just like the 911 caller stated. And that information right there is extremely important as we go on with this case, because you have to ask yourself, if the person who was caught on camera driving Cheryl's vehicle was in fact responsible for her disappearance and death, why would they go back to her house unless they had a reason to be there? Now, as you can imagine, based on this information, the police wanted to formally question Bill. However, he wasn't making himself readily available. In fact, he was the only person who didn't contact detectives to ask for an update on the investigation, and he didn't seem concerned about Cheryl's whereabouts at all. The police did reach out for an interview on October 9th, and Bill agreed to come in and speak to a detective. Once they were in the interview room, the detective asked Bill to write a timeline of his actions on the day Cheryl vanished. Bill stated that on the morning of the 2nd, he was at home, but he didn't actually see Cheryl. It was his day off, and he liked to sleep in, but at around 8 a.m., he got up and spoke to her through the bathroom door while she took a shower. Cheryl told him that her work car's battery was dead and asked him to jump it. Bill said he tried to jump the car but was unsuccessful, so he went inside to tell Cheryl. Now, according to him, since she was still in the shower, he told her through the closed bathroom door that he wasn't able to jump the car, and after that, he didn't see her again. He went back to bed and didn't wake up until around noon. When Bill was done detailing his timeline, the detective pointed out that Bill was the only person with Cheryl between the time she dropped off Michaela at school and when her car was parked at Kroger. Now, we have some of the interview footage between Bill and the detective, and I'm going to play a couple clips from that interview because I want you to have your own perspective on not only Bill's responses, but his demeanor throughout this interaction, because I found it extremely interesting.
The only person that we know she was with during that 3 hour and 20 minute time period, or even a portion of that 3 hour and 20 minute time period, is you. We have to take a long, hard look at you.
So there's the clip, and you can see Bill doesn't say anything. And maybe it's just me. Maybe you feel differently. Let me know what you think. But you can tell what the detective is inferring here. And yet Bill is very calm, non-reactive, and that may just be his personality, but I feel like if I were in that position, I would have much more of a reaction to the inference that I was responsible for my wife's disappearance. I would be right on that saying, I know where you're going with this, but I'm not buying it. And also, I'm here to counter that point because this is why it's not me. I also think it almost looks a little like he's defeated. In a way, his shoulders are kind of hunched forward. His arms are kind of in his lap. And it almost looks to me like a child who's being reprimanded, where they know they're wrong or they know they're guilty and they're just kind of listening to what their parent has to say. But listen, that's just my look on it. I've said it before. Everyone reacts different in these interview rooms, and you have to develop a baseline before you can really look into the physical cues that they display, both physical and non-physical cues. You have to know what their baseline is first. I don't have that here, but just taking this clip, seeing to me, it almost looks like he knows he's in trouble, and he's just trying to say as little as possible. But that's not where this interview ended, because after not really getting a response from Bill, the detective wanted to know why he never contacted the police between the time Cheryl was last seen and when her car was found at the Kroger, and this is what Bill's response was.
37 and a half hour time period, we weren't getting the level of concern from you that we would have expected out of a husband of 19 years. And, you know,
I'd say that under normal circumstances, that would be correct, but we weren't under normal circumstances. I mean, she was seeing people. That's where my thoughts were, that she was with someone.
So here's Bill's response, and it's expected. I had alluded to this earlier where during the initial interview, he kind of said the same thing. And under good circumstances, I could see a situation where that may be true, where they're both disappearing for certain amount of times while seeing other people. And that's just kind of the way their marriage works. But when it takes this long, this much time passes, you would think even with an open marriage, they still care about each other, and something would go off in Bill's head where he would say to himself, okay, she's normally gone for X amount of time. This is a lot longer. At minimum, maybe I should reach out to her. Maybe I should call her. Maybe I should text her. Just something to make sure she's okay. None of that took place, and he never reached out to law enforcement to say, hey, although we kind of have this open thing going, we're still living under the same roof. And I care about her. I love her. And something is off here and I want to get law enforcement involved. He never did that. And even his response, not only his words, but just his behavior to me, it doesn't sit right with me. So as the interview continued, the detective brought up the fact that an officer had previously noticed scabs on Bill's elbows, so he asked Bill to show him the scabs and explain how they happened. Bill rolled up his sleeves, revealing the scabs, and simply said, quote, "I hit a brick wall when I was cutting the grass." I don't have too much to say about these scabs. I think it'd be purely speculative at this point. Truly, I don't think we'll ever know how he obtained these injuries. On one hand, it could be an extremely unfortunate circumstance if he's telling the truth. On the other hand, it could be suggestive that he's more involved in Cheryl's disappearance than he's letting on. Now, later in the interview, the detective asked Bill about his feelings regarding the divorce, and Bill explained that he hadn't been expecting to be served with papers. The detective then mentioned that they had spoken with Cheryl's daughters, and they learned that after being served, Cheryl stayed at a hotel because she was scared.
Both of them said, my dad has a really, really, really bad temper and mom was afraid.
I have never, ever laid a hand on Cheryl.
So there you have it, right? The detective kind of set Bill up there where he says, well, how did you feel about the divorce? Giving Bill the opportunity to be honest and say, yeah, I was pretty pissed off about it. But that's not what he does. He plays it down and says, yeah, you know, I wasn't expecting to be served papers. That's when the detective throws a curveball and says, well, actually, I spoke to Cheryl's daughters and his daughters as well. And what they told us is that, you know, you were pretty upset about it and that you were pretty angry about being served papers. In fact, your wife decided to stay at the hotel because she was scared of you. And how's he going to dispute what his daughters are saying? You can't go that route. So he goes with the whole, I've never laid a hand on Cheryl, which if you're responsible for her murder, that's what you're expected to say. But I think the fact that he's not being transparent and honest with the detective when there's no doubt Bill knows why the investigator's coming at him, I think that's more important than his responses. He's giving him an opportunity to prove that he's going to be truthful and that he's going to be credible. And each time that he's given that opportunity, he fails by downplaying what was happening in the relationship, which has been corroborated by his own daughters. So it doesn't look good for Bill's credibility. And I think that's really what the detective is doing here. But also we can take from this is that Bill was very upset about being served papers. Yes, he was okay with the open marriage, but once he was served these papers, he became angry, and that was confirmed by the daughters and also by Cheryl when she made that comment to the coworker saying, yeah, if I'm not dead by tomorrow. And we talked about that earlier. Initially, you could take it as a joke, but when you combine that with what we have here, to me, it seems like Cheryl was half-heartedly kidding about that comment, even though the coworker may not have known what was going on behind the scenes. So they continue on with the interview. The detective asks a few more questions, and before ending, he asked Bill if he'd be willing to take a polygraph test to clear him as a suspect, and this was his response.
Would you be willing to speak with a detective as far as like a, for lack of a better term, like a lie detector test to rule you out?
You know, I don't know. I don't trust those things.
So there you have it. He doesn't trust the polygraph test, and that could be true. There is a reason to be a little apprehensive about polygraph tests. They're not perfect. So I can understand where someone may not want to risk their freedom with a test that has been proven to be wrong at times. But in this situation, I don't think it's necessarily the verbal response, more the nonverbal response that I'm looking at, where he's got his hands kind of on his face. He takes a few seconds to think about it like, oh, you know, I don't want to take this test. That's not good for me. And then he comes together and says, you know, I just don't trust him, indicating that, hey, listen, if this comes back where it shows I'm lying, all it's going to prove is that I was right and that this test is faulty. So obviously he declines to take the test. Now, following this interview, detectives asked Bill's girlfriend, Erin, to come in for questioning as well. She admitted to going on vacation with Bill and Michaela, but she claimed that Cheryl knew all about her relationship with Bill and had even told her in the spring that it was okay for them to date. Erin further revealed that on August 28th, she received a text from Cheryl's phone which read, quote, "If Cheryl were to die or wasn't in the picture, would you pursue a permanent relationship with Bill?" Erin thought the text message was odd, and as you can imagine, so did the police, and they questioned if Cheryl was the one that even sent that text. So as detectives are conducting these interviews, they're also still carrying on with their investigation. And you may have thought, wow, they got a lot of surveillance footage in this case. Well, guess what? They got some more, because detectives uncovered that there was actually surveillance footage from the same Kroger where Cheryl's car was found, except this time the footage was from inside the store and it prominently featured Bill. At approximately 8:08 p.m. on October 2nd, a video from inside Kroger showed Bill making a purchase. The purchase itself did not stand out, but what he looked like did. He was wearing dark clothing, a black polo shirt, dark colored shorts, and dark colored shoes. He also had an injury above his left elbow. Now remember, October 2nd is the same day that we have footage of Cheryl's car being driven and parked at the Kroger parking lot by an unknown white male. That same day now, we have footage of Bill buying groceries or buying something. You could take this two ways. You could say, well, this is clearly a guy who had no clue what was going on and just happened to be at the same location buying something later that day. And that might mean he's innocent. Or you could say this is someone who was involved in a crime and is now returning to the crime scene. Now, according to police records, after learning all of this, the police labeled Bill as a person of interest in Cheryl's disappearance, although they did not report this publicly. Then, the police brought Bill in for a second interview on October 30th. This time, the detective stepped it up a notch and told them that they thought Cheryl was dead and that he was responsible. They said they knew everything he did on October 2nd, and what he was telling them didn't match their timeline.
And we know it was you, and you're f***ing lying to us, and you need to tell the truth. We know everything you did that day. We know your timeline doesn't match what you're telling us.
But Bill stuck to the same story, and he said he didn't have anything to do with Cheryl's disappearance. Clearly, detectives didn't buy what Bill was selling, because they filed for multiple search warrants for Bill and Cheryl's home, their cars, bank records, and phone records. Details on what they found during these searches have not been released publicly. On February 19th, 2019, the police publicly announced for the first time that Bill was a suspect in Cheryl's disappearance, which was now being treated as a homicide. However, he wasn't arrested for anything. Following this news, WHIO-TV reached out to Bill for comment, and he actually spoke to them. Here's what he had to say.
Did you kill her?
No, I didn't. I did not. Never in my entire life hurt anyone.
Now, I play this footage not to take too much of it. I just want you to hear his side of the story. We really don't have anything other than this. And so, yeah, he's saying, listen, I wasn't involved. I didn't do it. And maybe some of you take this statement as a sign of innocence, where why would he speak publicly if he was involved? Some may also take this statement as an opportunity to try to control the narrative, which sometimes criminals will do. That's going to be up to you to decide. I know how I feel, and it's not good for Bill.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend, because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Now, after the police revealed that they believed Cheryl was dead, searches for her body took place over the next few weeks, but unfortunately she wasn't found. Then, on April 25th, 2020, around a year and a half after Cheryl disappeared, mushroom hunters discovered her skeletal remains on a private wooded property in Greene County, approximately 15 minutes from her home. Now, it's important to note that there was no evidence that Cheryl's body was buried, and she was wearing the same clothes she had been wearing on the day she disappeared. Now, why is this so important? Well, it's a few reasons. First off, it suggests to me that more than likely, Cheryl was killed in another location and her body was dumped here as a secondary crime scene. Secondly, it indicates to me that more than likely she was killed on the same day she disappeared. And then finally, to me, it indicates that her offender was in a hurry. They dumped her body in this location and got out of there without really covering her up or burying her, which would have helped avoid her being located later. But clearly, this person didn't have the time to do that, or they didn't want to risk being seen leaving that area. It also could be a combination of the two. But what I also take from this is a question. Why would the offender move where she was to this location unless they absolutely had to? What was important about the primary location where she was killed that she couldn't be found there? I know what you're thinking, so I'm going to say it. If she was killed in her house, you have to move her body from that location, because if she's found there and it's a homicide, it's automatically going to point towards the person who's with her, where in this case, the only person would be Bill. So yeah, if he's involved, he would have more than enough reason to have to move her and move her fast, because A, he doesn't want her to be found there, and B, he has to get back to that location before anyone sees him leaving or coming back and can implicate him later. And this is the point in the story, because I'm going pretty heavy here on Bill, where I have to qualify by saying these are my personal opinions based on my experiences. Bill is not behind bars right now. Clearly, I wouldn't be here covering this case if he was. So again, he's innocent in the eyes of the law. I don't want anybody going after him. I don't want anybody calling him. We have to allow the justice system to take its course, regardless of how long it may take in some situations. We still got more to go, though. Back to this crime scene. According to police, this was, quote, not a common area for a person to go, and they couldn't find a reason why Cheryl would have gone to this area except that she had been murdered and her body was left there, which is exactly what I just said. Now, once Cheryl's body was discovered, it was transported to the medical examiner's office for an autopsy, but it would take months before results were available. In August, authorities revealed that they were unable to determine Cheryl's cause or manner of death, but given the circumstances surrounding the discovery of her remains, the coroner believed, quote, homicidal violence was involved. The investigation into Cheryl's disappearance and alleged murder continued with few major updates. Bill remained a suspect, and in May of 2023, the police presented what they believed was a solid case to the prosecutor's office, but no charges were filed due to, quote, insufficient evidence. Now, unfortunately, this is the last major update we have in Cheryl's case, and today the investigation into Cheryl's disappearance is still ongoing. However, I think it's important to note that if you go to the Ohio Attorney General's office website, it states that Cheryl was murdered in her house and that Bill is the only person of interest in the investigation. Okay, so here's my perspective, and I want to elaborate on what I've already said throughout the episode. We have a situation where Cheryl is last seen by her daughter. She drives directly home from the school to her house while still in possession of her phone. Her phone pings at her house until 10:51 a.m. And according to witnesses, her vehicle is also at that location. And we now know, based on cell phone GPS data and her vehicle being seen on surveillance, that both her phone and her car was taken from her home and then dropped off at Kroger by an unknown white male who appears to match the description of her husband, who has admitted to being in the home with Cheryl during the time when her phone activity stopped. That's the facts of the case. They cannot be disputed. What we also have is the context of the relationship. We know that it was an open marriage that went south, and there was a divorce in the works, and one of the two parties, Bill, was not happy about it. The daughters expressed it, and Cheryl's behavior before her disappearance expressed it by her choosing to sleep at a hotel and then in different areas of the home away from Bill. So what we have here is a means, a motive, and an opportunity for Bill. And this isn't some revelation. These are things that have already been discussed to a certain degree publicly by the law enforcement entity in charge of this investigation. And on top of all that, let's not forget the really glaring evidence here. If there was a world where someone outside the home had somehow been able to gain access to the house, kill Cheryl, and get her out of the home without being detected by Bill, ask yourself this question. Why would they dump her body, dump the car, and then go back to the scene of the crime? That's right. Remember, we have multiple witnesses and multiple pieces of footage showing that whoever was responsible for Cheryl's death and disappearance dropped off the car and then walked back towards the Coker home. Ask yourself why anyone would do that unless they had to go back to the house. Now, for the sake of impartiality, I'm trying to play the other side. Let's say you believe that someone entered her home and killed her in the house. How wouldn't Bill wake up during that altercation? How wouldn't he know what's transpiring inside his home? And more importantly, if there was someone in there, why wouldn't they kill him too? Why would he still be alive? He basically slept through an abduction and or murder. Is that what we're supposed to believe? Whoever did this entered her house. They would have had to obtain her keys and her cell phone, which were inside the home. Therefore, they would have been in close proximity to Bill. It just doesn't make sense. And I always try to look at alternate angles. We've been doing this for over a year. You know, I will always give you different perspectives, different theories, even if I don't personally believe in them. I just can't find it here, which leads me to the frustration in this case. As I said, according to the prosecutor's office, there's insufficient evidence in this case. This is not the first time I've heard it. It's not the first time I've heard it here on Detective Perspective. It's not the first time I've heard it in my professional career. It's not the first time I heard it when I was covering cases on Breaking Homicide. It is extremely disheartening as an investigator to put together a case, although circumstantial in nature, and have other people look at it and go, you know what? You need more. And if I had to guess, when investigators presented their case to the prosecutor's office, they came back and said, we need a confession. We need a confession. And you know why I think that? Because I've heard that before too. And with some people, you're just not going to get it. I don't care how good of an interrogator you are. Looking at Bill, he's not confessing to anything. And he knows that if he is involved, you can't close the case unless he admits to it. So don't hold your breath. So this brings up a bigger question. What's the right thing to do here? We have a situation here where everything's pointing to Bill, and yet he's walking around as a free man. So what do you do in this situation? There's no other suspects. There's no other persons of interest. There's no exculpatory evidence that would rule Bill out. And there's no inculpatory evidence that would suggest someone else was involved. So I think what needs to happen here, and it has to happen in a lot of cases, is the prosecutor's office and the investigators have to get together and say, what else can be done? Is there anything? Is there anything we have that with the advancements in science and technology may help in this case? If the answer to that question is yes, then you hold off. If the answer to that question is no, and you can all sit there and honestly say, this is everything we have, it's circumstantial, but it's pretty compelling, and yet we're never going to get that solid, you know, feeling about this case unless he confesses. If you can all agree that he's not going to confess, then there has to be a serious discussion about going forward and letting the chips fall where they may. Yes, there is a strong possibility that it could go to trial and he could be acquitted. And if he is, he can never be tried again. But there's also a possibility that if you sit on your hands because there's not a smoking gun, this individual could spend the rest of their life as a free man and never answer for the crimes they committed. And I'm not just talking about Bill because, as I said earlier, in the eyes of the law, he is an innocent man. I'm talking about cases like this in general that really frustrate me. That even though there's probably not much we can do here, I have to cover them so you understand what's going on in the judicial system, because this is not an isolated incident. So if you're as frustrated about this case as I am, what I would like you to do is go to the Ohio State Attorney General's website and maybe send them an email or a message letting them know that you're extremely frustrated with this outcome. And I will tell you, there's no guarantee that by you emailing them, or if everybody watching this episode or listening to it emailing them, is going to make a difference. but it doesn't hurt to try. And I think with public pressure, it does sometimes cause entities, especially political figures, to take a second look at what they've done and maybe reevaluate decisions that have been made. Can't guarantee it, but it doesn't hurt to try. And although I do feel we have a lot in this case, maybe there's someone out there who hasn't come forward yet. Maybe their piece of information will put the prosecutors over the edge to finally say, okay, let's take a shot. So, just to recap, on the morning of October 2nd, 2018, Cheryl Coker was last seen dropping off her daughter at school in Riverside, Ohio. Later that day, at 10:52 a.m., her car was left in the parking lot of a Kroger near her home. A man dressed in black was seen exiting the vehicle and walking back toward the Coker home. On April 25th, 2020, Cheryl's remains were discovered in a wooded area in Greene County, approximately 15 minutes from her home. Authorities believe that she was murdered. Now, there's one part of this little recap here that I do think is important. We do have a lot of witness testimony from the Coker home. What we don't have is witness testimony from this wooded area in Greene County. So I'm really isolating this because if anyone was in that area on that date and time, and you happened to see something that at the time you didn't think was important, come forward, relay that information to law enforcement because you never know how critical your testimony could be to this case. So anyone with information in regards to Cheryl's murder should contact the Riverside Police Department at 937-233-1801. My final words, as always, go out to Cheryl's family. The only silver lining in this case is that it has only been 6 years. Relative to other cold cases, that's a short amount of time. And the individuals who have made the initial decisions in this case are probably still with these agencies. And there's always time to change your mind. So I'm going to keep holding out hope that as they relook at this case and see what they have, someone comes to a more reasonable conclusion and they realize that although circumstantial in nature, it is extremely compelling. And if that day does come, I will be right here updating you guys. But until then, that's going to do it for me. Everyone stay safe out there. I'll see you next week.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.